Welcome to the Tactical Security Podcast.
Welcome to Tactical Security Season 2, where we argue cybersecurity practices from a technical and managerial standpoint. Here's what you need to know about today's cybersecurity tactics.
This is episode 1 of Season 2, as you stated, Wolf. And in this episode, what we're going to do is introduce the human attack surface to the listeners.
So I am Wolf. By day, I'm an advisory CISO and a human attack surface.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids, and I am a slightly protected human attack surface.
I do think you do more in this space to protect yourself, to protect your family members, to protect your community than I do. And, you know, I know in season one, we had a lot of conversations around tactics and we had a lot of exploration around ideas. And I remember you kept coming back to, and here's what we teach the kids. And, and here's what we do in this type of event, in this type of venue. No, by the way, and I was taking a lot of notes, Dave. I was taking a lot of notes.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you so much. I do try to do my best to minimize certain footprints that could be used as an attack vector of my surface. There are certain things where I'm a complete open book. I feel like if people know more about me, then they get to see how uninteresting I am, and therefore they have no interest in getting anything about me or trying to attack me or fish me, which is not an invitation, by the way. But I there are certain areas, like, for example, my property, right? Even though that is not the house and the property is not human, it does affect where the humans live and sleep. So I have motion cameras and everything all around my property, and it's all recorded into the cloud. So they can't destroy the camera thinking they'll destroy the evidence because there's a buffer. It streams right into the cloud. And that's one of my countermeasures for that kind of a physical attack. But there's many others, like you pointed out. So, you know, I appreciate your observations. Thank you.
No problem. You know, I guess I'm not as technical as that. Of course, you know, clearly being street smart in the ways of the internet and social media is near and dear to my heart. And I've taught, you know, my kids that, my family members that. When I used to run an apprenticeship, that was one of the things we talked about. You know, be careful what you're putting on the socials.
Of course.
Be careful what you're sharing. So, you know, certainly aware of it. But one of the things that always both drives me nuts, and really it was another impetus in my mind for the season, is the constant blame of cybersecurity professionals of people, right? Like, you know, we've got that comic that makes the rounds every once in a while, which is, in this corner of the arena, it's a boxing arena, in this corner of the arena, we've got XDR and SASE and Zero Trust and next gen firewalls. And in that corner of the arena, we've got Dave. we're always blaming the people, and I don't think that's fair. I think we let ourselves off the hook too much, as we've talked about in past episodes.
I find that fascinating that you state that, because in our past conversations, you're always promoting, well, technology. We need technology to protect humans, and I'm like, no. We need to teach the humans not to fall prey to other people's technology or attacks, right? You know, they still need to work hand in hand. And it's almost sound as like in that example, you're kind of flipping it, because maybe you are coming around and realizing that the human attack surface is the most sensitive vector, but I believe is the best trainable.
Huh. I don't know if that's true. And I'm looking forward to some of the guests we've got lined up this season, you know, probing that very question with them. Like, you know, we've got Chris Krebs, Wendy Nather, Dave Kennedy, many, many others that are lined up to really probe this. And I want to know from them. I want to know, hey, is this all about the people? Is this really like, you know, Dave screwed up? Not you, Dave, but the comic Dave. I just realized that the comic is not named after you, but you guys hear the first name. I missed it at the first point. But I want to know, do people think that it really is humans just don't work well with technology? Or is there also a process component? Is there also a design component? Is there also a behavior science component?
You know, while you're going through that second part, not the list of the people and the namesake part, but people with technology. Well, people have been around, arguably based on archaeological science, maybe millions of years, right? Like early hominids and, you know, bipedal humanoids, right? But historically, I think we only go back like 10,000 years or so, but obviously there was people around. So people have been around way longer than technology. And when I say technology, I'm talking about the digital era, right? You know, we're still in our infancy when it comes to what we're going to be capable of doing with technology. You know, the automotive, like my kids, and this is what I love, you know, you're a parent as well, but I'm like, you know, my youngest kid comes to me, he's like, well, how long have cars been around? I'm like, well, if you think about it, it's been a little more than 100 years. And he goes, and now they could drive themselves. I go, isn't that pretty amazing? You know, this technology has been around for maybe what, 120 some odd years. I think we talked about it before. I'm probably wrong, but, and now they drive themselves, but they're also susceptible to attack. And the human inside the vehicle is susceptible to attack if the technology is as well, right?
Yeah, I think so. And if you think about it, the way I frame it in terms of time is we've got 30 years of technology running on 30,000 years of legacy humans, right? 30,000 years ago, I should have given you pause to laugh at that. But 30,000 years ago is when people were first making tools and painting was early language. And 30 years ago was early internet for the consumers. Of course, you can, I have very esoteric arguments with those numbers because some people will be like, no, it's only been 10 years since we were on the cloud. And other people are like, no, in the 1960s, we had mainframes. But roughly 30 years of getting online and making the technology that we're familiar with ubiquitous, and 30,000 years ago when we were first starting out with stone tools.
And communicating through wall paintings. I mean, that was the first tweet, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But it might have been a picture of a bird, who knows, but it's not relevant. Going back to that, and I agree, I mean, yeah, we've got these legacy problems and just inherent ways of thinking, behaving, feeling, and doing, and then therefore, people who are the same know and understand these weaknesses and able to create technology to exploit them. And that's what we're really talking about today, is to help people understand what those potential surface areas could be and ways to better protect them, right? And I love the names that you dropped. I was going to introduce Chris Krebs as a special surprise guest, because he was, right?
Oh, yeah. But do you want to edit that out?
No, I'm not going to edit that out. In fact, I'm going to leave this part where you asked me about editing it out in too.
So, pro tip for the audience, if you are ever doing a podcast, make sure you're the one who edits, because every time Dave is amazing. You might wonder, did Wolf really say something really clever that made the cutting room floor? I'll just leave that open. No. So yeah, I mean, we do have some great folks coming on. And we're all talking this season about the human attack surface, because it does come up frequently. You know, I know a lot of our listeners wonder about it. A lot of our audience hears about it. A lot of the attention, of course, is put on it every single Security Awareness Month, which is the same month as Pizza Awareness Month, for those of you looking for more interesting things to do in October. However, Dave, that brings up an interesting question. Like, how do you define the human attack surface?
That's a great question. And I think even the listeners should be asking themselves that too, because I really believe that kind of depending upon what your role is professionally would really determine what you believe is that human attack surface. So to answer your question, I believe the human attack surface is comprised of anything that interacts with human, legacy human, five senses. Okay. And I'm kind of slightly excluding the cognitive, only because there's a part of that, but that has something to do with like the visual and the audio. And what do I mean? Well, if you see a spam text, you know, it's visual, you know, it's something that you should just ignore or delete, not reply to. If you get a phone call from Windows tech support, that's audio, Well, if you don't run Windows or if you don't even have your computer on, hang up. I'm not going to go through every sense, but also think back, taste. Someone might be like, no, taste, come on. No, not that taste. There is an African berry that if you eat like one of these pills that somebody made from the berry, it will change your tastes of certain things. So like, I think spicy tastes sour, salty tastes sweet. Like it does, I don't know if it's like a complete flip the bit, but it changes things. So if you think about that from an attack surface, if you have a certain food allergy and somebody tampers with your food or your drink with that liquid from that berry, you might start to believe you're going to go into anaphylactic shock and you're going to react to that. So you've just fallen prey to an attack. What are your thoughts on that?
There's a cocktail bar, one of my favorite cocktail bars in San Diego. Just a little while ago, I was there and they have a cocktail which is served with this very same berry you're talking about. So you eat the berry first and it flips your taste buds and makes you salivate and really amps up everything you taste. And then you drink the cocktail. Mm-hmm. And after about like 15 minutes or so, the berry wears off. So it's interesting you point that out because that's such a weird experience mm-hmm. to suddenly have your taste buds registering things differently. It's so trippy.
Well, I know somebody, I'll name him Faraday, he's a friend of mine, so it's okay if I use his name, in Milwaukee at CypherCon had a table and he was doing, you know, we call it biohacking. And he was like, I got these pills, try it out. And then he had a whole bunch of different things that people could sample, including alcohol. Like alcohol didn't taste like alcohol. I mean, it tasted completely different. Don't ask me what, this was a few years ago, but it was quite an experience, as you're saying.
Absolutely it is. So I think the senses part is fascinating. But something else you said there resonated with me. It's like where you are in your role, where you are from your vantage point determines how you view the human attack surface. So as a CISO, I oftentimes view the attack surface as organizational culture. I view the attack surface as the people who are performing tasks within our org. Who's our champions? Who's our advocates? How do we engage that? How do we nudge the culture? Because for those of you who are coming in really excited to learn how to do culture change, that is so tricky and nearly impossible from a cybersecurity perspective. But certainly there are ways to engage folks to make more secure behaviors and take more secure actions.
Maybe.
With technology.
With technology. There's got to be a certain willingness for acceptance for that behavior modification and those changes. If they're not open to it, they're going to continue doing what they do. That's why these phishing test exercises, right? You know, that's again a visual type of attack surface exploit is who's clicking the link, right? You and I have discussed before, I'm like, well, you know, the way to solve a phishing problem is take away all the links. You're like, no, the internet is for clicking. So I thought it was for something else, but we won't go there. It's a family-friendly podcast. But it's just, I don't think there's a panacea? You know, it's going to be something that does require a lot of effort, not just from like the CISO level and their strategies on how to limit the human attack surface, but also the humans to be open to the change. And that's the only way we're really going to get closer to reducing these attacks and ransomware and everything else going on.
With regards to phishing, another interesting thing about human culture, the 30,000 years of legacy we're all bringing, is how quickly we get habituated to things. So I like to say, you know, when work looks like work, it's done. And that is a positive thing. Like if I can make security look like what you do every day, everything's fine. It's also a potential attack vector. If I can make the attack look like what you do every day, then you're more likely to fall for it. You mentioned spam texts earlier. What's fascinating to me is, you know, 10 years ago, we weren't really texting that much on a day-to-day basis. And then 2020 happens. And suddenly all my food gets sent by text. My groceries are done by a shopper and there's a text message there. My deliveries are sent by text. The way I order a car is sent by text. Suddenly we go through a couple years of everything, getting, hey, here's the delivery, here's your order, here's your food, here's your car, here's what you need to do next. And we're all clicking on these texts. Not surprisingly, suddenly attackers are using text message phishing. Now, that wouldn't have worked 10 years ago. It definitely wouldn't have worked 30 years ago when SMS was very limited and it didn't look like what we're used to. But now that SMS phish looks like work, work gets done. Now that it looks like a standard text message, people are clicking on it. So there's very intriguing aspects of people and how we get used to things, how we get familiar with things, how we basically get trained to do certain activities that adversaries leverage again and again. So I'm looking forward in this season to really probing that with a variety of different folks and a variety of different roles who can answer some questions for us and hopefully tell you, Dave, that I'm right, that it's all a technology problem.
Well, for your sake, I hope they agree with you and say it's a technology problem. But you mentioned a few people. But one of the things I think really the listeners are going to benefit from is going to be that it's not just here's another, you know, open source intelligence or OSINT social engineer, and they're all going to keep talking about the same thing. We got people from really different aspects or facets of the industry, even someone from the defensive, right? Someone even that you work with, Wendy Nather, from the CISO kind of lens, and then all the way down to like someone like Kathy Ullman, who's like an analyst and is responsible for everything, right? Like she's got to do all this stuff. She can't just sit back and be like, here's how we need to execute on this vision. She's more like react. It's going to be very, I think, very educational for our listeners.
Absolutely. So is there anything else that, like any parting thoughts you want to give to our audience? Like, hey, check out this or think about that.
Well, I think one of the things they should do is listen to all the different recordings in order as they're released, because they kind of build on one another in some cases. And also, I think it might also make a bit more sense when they start to hear first from like Chris Silvers and then Jeff Mann and then, you know, Dave Kennedy or Ian Meyer, like, you know, you mentioned earlier. And then all the way to Kathy Ullman, who kind of like, you know, wraps it up for us. So it just, I think that's the best advice, is definitely listen to them all and listen to them in order.
Yeah. And Chris Silvers, who does do social engineering, Ms. Bat, who's protected so many different things behind the scenes and is one of my like favorite, like, you know, defensive, offensive people behind the curtain. With this season, yeah, definitely listen to it in order and listen to how everyone's perspective changes on the human attack surface. I think at the end of going through this, we should have a much more rich understanding of the people we're trying to protect and the ways that we can engage those people in order to protect them out on the web. But with that, I think we're at a close, Dave. Or is there anything you want to, did we miss anything?
No, I think this has been great. And I hope it's really kind of priming the pump for our listeners and getting them excited to go to the next podcast video. And just sorry, as we're talking, something pops up and is attacking my human surface. So that's why I paused and laughed. But yeah, this has been Tactical Security with Wolf and Dave. Please join us for the future episodes where we're going to be going into tactical tools and practices with a focus on the human attack surface. Stay healthy, everyone. Question truth and be better.